thought for today. Words are prized possessions. Words are prized possessions. Words are prized possessions. All of us have the opportunity of having happy words and having sad words and having power words and having weak words. We have the opportunity of selecting from the plethora of words that are abounding in the dictionaries. Many dictionaries. We have dictionaries of German, dictionaries of English, dictionaries of French. We have dictionaries of every language. And different dictionaries enunciate different words in different ways. Many times you will come to studying English and you will study British English. And British English is quite different from American English. In fact, on your computer, you can have a dictionary for American English and a dictionary for British English. And why would you have two separate dictionaries? Because the British English had the O-U-R for color and other things of that nature, and the American English has C-O-L-O-R, always doing it the simplest way. And it seems that some people spell seem, S-E-E-M, and some people spell seem, S-E-A-M. To seem, S-E-E-M, is to appear. To S-E-A-M is to sew a seam on a pair of trousers, or to seam up a given piece of material, or to put a seam on a book. Many different ways that these things happen, but we must be very careful how we use words, because if we mean S-E-E-M, we don't mean S-E-A-M, and if we mean S-E-A-M, we don't mean S-E-E-M. So we have to be very careful of these prized words. Now, when they're brought to our attention, we must act upon them and instantly inculcate them into our vocabulary. I have edited the works of the staff and the students of the University of Healing going on 27 years now, almost 28 years. And in doing this, I have corrected the students' papers and corrected their grammar, corrected their English, and done a very adequate job of being their English teacher as well as their teacher of spiritual understanding. And it seems so interesting how I would correct them and they would not follow that correction. I would make a correction in grammar and they would not follow it. The next article or letter or whatever they sent to me would have the same mistake in it. And I would correct it again. And it would have the same mistake. I'd circle it and I'd say, this is not what you want to say. You want to say this. Or perhaps you do want to say that. If you want to say that, then you have to put these adverbs and adjectives and subjects with it. Now, we have to be very careful how we use words. To use a few words well is a very great monument. Many people like a tremendous vocabulary. I find a tremendous vocabulary fascinating because it speeds up sharing ideas, because one word can say a whole paragraph or say a whole story. And unconditional love is one such word that has a broad basic meaning to it that none of us understand. None of us have ever experienced unconditional love. None of us have ever given unconditional love. None of us have even tried to give unconditional love. We think it's a noble and a wonderful and a powerful word. It's a powerful concept. It's so fantastic. It's divine. But we don't seem to think that we can do it. Why should we have something that's so wonderful and so divine and so powerful as something that we think we cannot do? Why should we have that? Why would we allow ourselves to live in that consciousness? Well, We always say to ourselves, I am human, and therefore I'm forgiven. I'm just a little child and I made a mistake, therefore I'm forgiven. That doesn't work. It doesn't work. I have worked with little children for many, many years, as a Boy Scout leader, as a Cub Scout leader, as a Sunday school teacher, as a choir director with the youth choirs and with the senior choirs and so forth. And I've worked with children in many ways, and whenever a little child comes up to me, no matter what age, and said, I didn't know. I didn't know what was right to do. They knew what was right to do. They knew exactly what was right to do. That's why they said they didn't know what was right to do. And I will not accept that from them. I'll say to them, all right, let me do to you what you didn't know was right to do to somebody else. Oh, no, no, no. Okay, then never say that again. And never do that again. Be responsible for your words and your actions. And so as I had worked with these little children, miracles would happen to them. Now, working with adults is a different situation. Adults seem to think that they already know it all. They've been there, done that. They're not interested in improving themselves in any way except to walk the spiritual path. They don't realize that the self-discipline they learn in being correct and having good manners and having good spelling and having good choice of words and having a good choice of attitudes and actions. This is walking your spiritual path. If I say, you are terrible, and you allow me to confront you and irritate you and upset you, then you are terrible. If I say, you are terrible, and you don't allow this to touch you in the slightest because you know who you are, you know you're a beautiful person, you know that you're not terrible. It's not that you know that you're not terrible, it's you know that you're good. And so you cannot be touched by it. And you might even do the agree with your adversary quickly and say, oh, where am I terrible? If I'm terrible, I sure like to improve it. How can I improve whatever it is I'm terrible in? Because really, I'm not aware of it. You're stupid. Yes, that's true, but tell me how I can be aware of it. You're dumb. Well, tell me how I can be aware of it. Well, I don't know. Well, if you don't know how I can be aware of what I've done that's stupid and dumb, then what can I do? Well, they don't know. The moment you confront someone with the idea that they're calling you ignorant, stupid, or limited in any way, and you confront them with humility, not with, I'm superior to you. Why? How dare you speak unkindly of me? But with humility and say, hey, if I've done something stupid, tell me. I don't want to do it again. I want to live my life in harmony and peace and joy and happiness and right action, truth. And if you noticed it, wow, I sure like to be aware of it. And the person was just flapping their gums. They were just talking to hear themselves talk. And so many times we do that in life. We talk to hear ourselves talk. Ellen is one like that. Ellen sits in a group of people, and if there's no conversation going on, she thinks, we must have a conversation going on. If there's no conversation going on, we're a bunch of deadheads sitting around a table, and nothing good is happening, and nobody is doing anything worthwhile, and we've got to have a conversation, we've got to have a conversation. And so she starts a conversation. And the conversation can be mundane or spiritual or not. Now, is Ellen a bad person for doing this? No. Is she a good person for doing this? No. Is there any benefit to come from this? No. Is there any benefit to come from this? Yes. Whatever we choose, whatever we choose. Now, if Ellen, in her great wisdom as a master, were to see the people sitting in silence at the table, perhaps somebody had a schnitt on, Perhaps somebody was upset with something, but that's their problem. But if she would see these people sitting quietly at the table, she would immediately say, they are meditating upon their spiritual qualities. They are listening within. Oh, what a wonderful group of people I'm associated with. Here at the table where we normally garble, blah, 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 we're sitting quietly meditating on our inner self while we're quietly eating, slowly eating our food, masticating it perfectly, beautifully, enjoying how we chew it, every morsel. Now, oh, blah, 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 you got something to say. Not to be going to that. See, what are we going to do? You see, true, if Ellen sees someone unhappy at the table and she wants to make them happy, that's glorious. But if Ellen instead would see people sitting at the table meditating, and she'd say, wow, what a great group these are, always in meditation, and see them in meditation, see them finding themselves in their meditation, putting the words into her heart that these people are meditating, that they're listening within, they're listening to the divine within them. What would happen to those people? They'd be listening to the divine within, as far as she's concerned. And she's the only one that counts. If you look at the table and you see everyone quiet, and you say, man, this is a drag. It's a boring group, you know. There's no life here. You know? Is that what you say when you see people in meditation? What a drag. What a boring group. They're all sitting here with their mouth shut, eyes closed. I bet some of them are even sleeping. Oh, whose idea is that? You see, we sort of lose perspective in our busy world of society, where we have to always keep talking, we have to always keep sharing, we have to always keep doing. And we think that that's necessary for us here. Well, here we have a little secret that is not known to the outside world. And the little secret that we have here is we know we're not God, that there is no God. We know there is no law of cause and effect. We know there is no other. We know that we are one, the only. And we know that we are absolute. Now, the rest of the world doesn't know this. Some of them may have an inkling of it, but the rest of the world doesn't know it. Now, when will the rest of the world find out? As soon as we think the rest of the world knows it. When we think the rest of the world knows that all is absolute, and each is absolute, they will know it. As soon as we think this thought, we empower this thought, and it comes into being. It is our word, our prized possession, that we put forth. We can say to the child, you're a genius. And that's wonderful. But why are we saying it out loud? We're saying it out loud because we're affirming it. We want the parent to feel it. We want the child to feel it. We want us to feel it. We look at an obstreperous child, a naughty child, and we say, well, how is that little genius today? Putting a new cause in motion. Whereas if we were to look at that little child who was obstreperous, and we'd say to ourselves, what a beautiful expression of divinity. What a mag to ourselves. What a wonderful being. We would not see that child obstreperous. We would not see that child a mischief maker. We would not see that child a naughty little thing. We would see that child as we see ourselves, divine and perfect. You see, I can only go back to the words of Jesus. And he said, be not like the Pharisees who stand on the street corners, that their much praying will be seen of man. For they have their reward. They have their reward. So when we speak our words out loud, trying to impress the world with what we believe and what we know and what we are, what we're doing is we're getting our reward immediately. We're getting our reward in the reaction that the world has to our words. And the world thinks our words are great, or the world thinks our words are not so great. It all depends. Now, what do you think? What do you think on that? Do you think that our world is great? Do you think our words are great? Do you think that we are great? Do you think that what we're doing is wonderful? Do you think what you're doing is wonderful? Can you look at a sunset and be thrilled and not need to share it? Can you go to dinner in a restaurant by yourself, by candlelight, in a very fine restaurant, and order a wonderful meal and eat it by yourself and not feel, that's why people come to you, not feel that you are lonely and someone should come and sit down with you? Can you enjoy your own company? Can you like being with yourself? Can you be happy in your own presence? And this is the true test of our walking the spiritual path. Because if we need to surround ourselves with activity all the time, if we need to surround ourselves with things that are taking our attention, things that make us feel fulfilled, things that make us feel that we are desired and chosen, we get problems. Because it's these things that give us our reward. But when we, with our own words, well chosen within ourselves, I walk the path out here and I give some of my most superb lectures to myself. To myself. Sometimes I think, gee, I wish I had a tape recorder. And other times I say, this is for me. I feel good. And very good, because I'm talking to myself. There's nobody out there. There's the trees, the birds, the bees, the deer, the dogs, the coyotes, the cats, the wolves, whatever is out there. I don't think I'm talking to them. I'm just talking to myself. And myself is the universe. Myself is wonderful. Myself is fantastic. That's who I'm talking to. And I'm not having the universe look back at me and say, well done, my beloved son, that was a great talk. That was a great talk. That will change the world. That will change the point of view of humanity. Well, it's not going to say that. You know why it's not going to say that? Because it was to me. It was to me. Now, will that change me? No. All that I'm saying is what I believe. All that I'm saying is a reflection of what's going on inside of myself. And if it's good and very good, that's what I am. And that's what you are. Go out and sing unto the hills. The hills are alive with the sound of music. That wonderful sound that we've heard before. The hills are alive with the sound of music. Go and sing with the sound of music, because it's the sound from within your heart. And sing your precious, prized words, that they may be a treasure more deep in your heart, that they may be the only treasure in your heart, the treasure of your awareness of who you are and what you are. That's what you've come here to find out. That's what you've come here to play the game of, to see if you can remember who you are. You're not here to see if you can remember you're human. You're not here to see if you can remember you're divine. You're here to see if you can remember you are absolute. You are is. Wow. What an unemotional, unresponsive being to be absolute or an is. And I say to you, don't sell yourself short in this area. Being absolute and being an is has ramifications to it that are indescribable to a relative consciousness. Why do you think all is absolute, all is the all of the is? Why do you think that? Because it's boring? Hardly. One day you'll understand that being absolute and being is far more enchanting, far more exciting, far more rewarding than anything that the human life has to offer. And in absolute, in all this, in is no pain. no sorrow, no sadness, only awareness of the greatness that all is. Can you conceive that? That's a very difficult point to conceive because we think of everything in our relative terms. So think about that. Think about that very carefully, because that's a goal devoutly to be wished and devoutly to be followed, should you choose to do so. Where are you on this path of life? Words are a prized possession. What words have you said to me at any time? What words will you say to me from now on? What words will you say to yourself? I am not you, and I am not the world. I am a sharer. I am a reflection of you, showing you where you stand and asking you if that's where you want to stand. I'm not judging you, because I see through you. I know who you really are. I know who you will be aware that you are in an instant or in a lifetime or in a million lifetimes, if we want to say such a word. But right now, that is where you can and are. That's where you can be, and that's where you are. That's where you live right now, in this allness, in this absolute awareness, in your divinity. Yes, you may walk step by step. You may walk by moment by moment. You may walk steps that are high. You have to lift your legs up high to climb them like a mountain, with no steps at all. Or you may have your steps 4 by 16, where you just glide up them like a Russian ballet dancer that moves across the stage with their tippy toes, and they float as though they're mechanical dolls. And you wonder, how do they do that? They merge in oneness with what they're doing. It's a very fabulous experience to see. Where are you? Where are you on this wonderful trail of life? You're here. You're here because you're ready for what we have to share with you. You're here because you're ready to claim this. You're here because nothing else matters to you than to be who you really are. Many people have come, many people have gone, many people have stayed a long time and gotten nothing. You say, well, they got... Absolute? Are you absolute? Do you want your license for driving the car? Then stay in school long enough to get your license. It's not your certificate that says you're a bachelor, master, doctor, minister, practitioner. It's not your church certificate. Those are just nothing. What is the thing is when you arrive at the point of being absolute. First, you will arrive at the point of being master of this universe. You will be master of this universe in every step, in every attitude, which you are already. And then, after you have that mastership, you will recognize that that was what you came here to know, that that was just an illusion and you're stepping on. Because everything in this universe is illusion. Everything. You and I, everything. Pure illusions. Here today, gone tomorrow. You know that. You know that. A puff of smoke and what once was a field of hay is now just dust blown away. What is it for you? You want to become aware that that's just all fragile. It's all nothingness. You want to go from the nothingness into the allness. And the allness is absolute. The allness is. The allness is the I am. Interesting. you say, okay. So, if you don't have to learn it here, you can learn it anywhere. But when you begin to think you have to go out and earn a living, when you begin to think you have to go out and make things happen, you're a long way from where you're going. When you know that I am all, I speak my word, so to speak, and the power of the universe vibrates to manifest. I speak my word and the invisible becomes visible. All is now. And we speak our word and the invisible becomes visible. That's what we do. The invisible becomes visible. You're not making something happen. You're just revealing that which already is. Now, is that so hard to conceive and understand? Well, Herb, why don't you do it? I do it all the time. Well, why don't you do it in something we can see? So you can worship me? So you can think I can do things you can't do? No way. You hang on the cross, people you worship, and I'm not interested in being worshipped. You slaughter people that you worship. You smother people you worship. You destroy people you worship. You go rip their clothes off. You want a little souvenir of this rock singer that you worship. That he stands there naked makes no difference to you. That he had a very lovely suit that meant a lot to him makes no difference to you. You just rip off your little tab because you worship him. Your worshiping is not of him. It's of what he stands for. But you take the little symbol, the little fragile piece, and you say, I have a piece of the rock. I have a symbol. I have the cloak that Jesus wore as he was in the tomb or whatever, blah, blah, blah. If you are all, if you are absolute, if you are is, there are no remnants. If you are all, there are no scraps that you worship. There is no cross. There is no man. There is no world. There's only you. And this is where I would take you, send you, push you, encourage you to go there. But not too hard. Because that's not my job. My job is just to let you know what it's like and sort of lead you as far as you want to be led. But you have to do the drinking at the fountain of eternalness. You're wonderful. You're magnificent. Words are prized possessions. Let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in thy sight. These are from the Old Testament. There are many, many wonderful phrases. Shakespeare had them. If you ever choose to learn to speak well, read the works of Churchill. Churchill used four-letter words beautifully. That doesn't mean swear words. He used the most minuscule vocabulary in the most magnificent way. As you know, in the British, the English dictionary, they have 50 to 100 definitions for a given word. Look up the word do in the American English dictionary, and you will find so many definitions of what it means. Look up the word love. Look up the word like. Look up the word how. Look up any of these words, and you'll find a diverse meaning. And you can speak with simplicity. And you can share with magnificence. And you can be the all. Words, prized possessions, and they're wonderful too. Words are prized possessions. Use them well. Agree with your adversary quickly. Be yourself and have fun. And I love you. I love you so much because that's the way I created you. And that's the way you created me. So, have a good one.